This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome
to My Favorite Murder,
the minisode.
That's Karen Kilgara.
Oh, that's Georgia Hardstark.
Hi.
We're here to read you your emails you've sent to us.
That's right.
You know this vibe.
Yeah, we asked for them, so it's not like you're assaulting us. It's like we're sharing.
No, I didn't mean you. I meant the listener.
Oh, no, I meant them too. You want to go first? Want me to go first?
It's not like you're assaulting us. We demand that they send us emails nonstop.
This isn't
you
a problem.
Go first this week?
This isn't.
No, this isn't. We're not in a fight. Just so you know, like the approach should be, we are totally getting along great.
Us and the listeners?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you and I. I feel like for myself across the board, I'm doing very good.
I feel like this whole podcast was a misunderstanding.
Should we erase this? All right.
Yeah. Wait, am I going first?
Oh, do you want to?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not?
Whatever isn't going to cause a fight.
Just kidding. We're teetering on the fucking edge here. So whatever.
Whatever you want.
All right. Well, then I'll go first so I don't start screaming.
Okay.
This one's called... Gravestone Repair and Archaeology. Mm. Hi, Karen, Georgia, and Steven. I heard you talking about at Lady Taphos, which is the Instagram I recommended, and her gravestone cleaning on the episode this week, and was super excited because I am an archaeologist and gravestone conservator. I'm currently doing my PhD in archaeology, studying early 17th century graveyards. And my husband and I have started a small business to restore and clean historic gravestones in our province of Newfoundland and Labrador, Canada. Okay, this is like a show you would watch. I feel like this is the beginning of a TV drama mystery.
Oh, yeah.
That you would watch.
Yeah. Grave cleaner? The grave cleaners of Labrador?
Yeah, and they're like this cute couple. Yeah.
Oh yeah, maybe there's a mystery every time they go to a different cemetery.
Is their house haunted? Is every cemetery haunted? Of course. Oh, then they have to solve for someone's.
Yeah.
What was Jennifer?
For someone's ancient murder?
Yes. Or like have to reunite. Maybe it's not like a murder. Maybe it's like a reuniting these two long lost loves. What was Jennifer Love Hewitt's ghost?
Both dead.
Yeah.
Hers was Ghost Whisperer.
Yes. Which I actually.
Is that right?
Yeah. Is it? Is that right,
you're
Steven?
You're right, Karen. You got it.
Never seen an episode.
I actually. No. There was a time that I really. It was so like quaint, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, anyways, that's.
Here's the thing. I would never argue the talent or the career of Jennifer Love Hewitt.
No.
She was a child actor. She was a tween actor. Uh-huh. She was a teen actor. She's been an adult actor. She's been killing it for decades back to back. You can't argue it.
Do you think her and Anne Hathaway are best friends?
Either they're best friends or they're intensely passive aggressive acquaintances. Yeah. You know what I mean? Where they're like beautiful, beautiful ingenue types who have to pretend they get along.
Yeah.
Or it's a bad look for both.
Do you think?
So they're like, good to see you.
Great.
And
to
the
see
smiling
you.
Is like vicious, the most vicious smiling.
Do you think for each other's birthdays, they send them these bouquets, but the kind that when they like die, the stuff gets everywhere and it's hard to clean up?
You know what a gross bouquet is? No offense to people who like this, but I can't, if there's a lily in a bouquet, that odor, which is straight up funeral home smell.
Yeah.
It's just like that. I'll always go right up and just be like,
plunk.
Gotta put that outside. Yeah.
All right. I'm glad we worked that out.
Because they love each other.
That's right. Oh, and then she says it's called Black Cat Cemetery Preservation, which I feel like you'd appreciate. And I do.
Fully.
So I was trained in gravestone repair while working for Woodland Cemetery in London, Ontario, a few years ago. And I had the honor, with a U, of restoring stones for the dead who have no one to clean their stones and for family members who thought their relatives' gravestones were gone. But the most amazing gravestone I've ever worked on was for a 17-year-old named Robert Cooper, who died at work in a soda water factory in 1871. The large, high-pressure cylinder he was carrying ruptured, and the force threw him into the ceiling, killing him instantly.
Oh, no.
As a result of the horrible accident, laws were changed around how many times a high-pressure container could be repaired. So, like, no more Band-Aids on that thing, you know?
Yeah, right. You get rid of that thing.
As it was a faulty repair that failed and killed him. We found his gravestone sunken under the grass and were able to raise it and clean it with water, a soft brush, and D2, which I was reading about because I want to buy it, a safe cleaner that doesn't damage stone, and laid it on packed gravel for drainage. The most amazing thing is that the gravestone has a picture of the very thing that killed him carved into it.
Oh, no.
It almost looks like a bomb. One of the most unique gravestones I've ever seen. And then she said, see attached. So let's put that up on the episode's page. It's an honor to share his story with you all. Thank you for taking the time to read it. The best part of my job is helping these gravestones stick around a little longer so we can help people long past still tell their stories. Hoping to see you live again one day when things and groups are allowed again. Robin L.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah.
I love that. That's like a whole kind of niche. I won't call it an industry, but like area that I've never even thought of. Yeah. That like I've seen several things on Twitter now about that. Restoration, that
it
type
just,
of restoration.
It's so cool. And it just reminds me of the things that I always wish, like, don't only listen to your school guidance counselors about what you can do with your life. You know, it's not just fucking business and industry. There's so many cool passion projects that you can turn into a business. That's really cool.
I feel like these younger generations know that because they're such internet children,
right?
That they're like, that's correct. Everything's possible. Where it's like, oh, sorry, we're from the 80s where you had four choices of everything.
That's right.
Four choices of TV channels, jobs.
Yeah.
With the soda at 7-Eleven, like whatever it was, there was four. make the best of it.
There was four. They had to come up with the number five just to give us more options.
And it happened in 1986, right. Ironically. I don't know what a missed opportunity. Oh, you know what that also is going to make me say, and I don't think we said this last time, but this is strangely coming full circle because we have merch. I wonder if we still sell it. The merch that has the decoration with the skull and the wings, that is a design that was taken from a Victorian gravestone.
Yes, you're so good tie-in, Karen.
Right? The artist that designed that t-shirt for us went through old Victorian, like old-fashioned 1800s or 1700s gravestones. I think in Boston.
Yeah.
And found that design to put on that shirt.
Look, we were thinking ahead of even the podcast that we didn't know this would be a thing.
No brag, but we're visionaries.
At least the merch team is. send us.
Yeah, exactly.
Send us. I don't know. Do you do that for a living, too? Send us the coolest gravestone or like story from a gravestone that you've uncovered. We'd love to hear it.
I was on a road trip one time. And we were in way Northern California, like way up by Arcadia or the way north, northernmost city that now I can't think of. But anyway,
Stephen,
Stephen.
Oh, I was going to say Arcata or
Arcata.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. But there's another one up there that is the main one that like where the skunk train goes and stuff.
Humboldt.
It's above Humboldt, above Fort Bragg. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Too bad for me that I can't remember anything anymore. So we're in these back roads. We basically took a super interesting way to get, you know, mm-hmm. where we were going. And we were on a 2-lane back road. There was nothing around. It was just fields on both sides. And on the left side of the road, it turned into like this hill that had big oak trees on it. Mm-hmm. It was kind of spooky. And I looked up. Mm-hmm. And on one part of this hill, there was a tiny, very old cemetery that went straight up a hill. And it was the coolest looking. And it was the kind of thing where it happened like two seconds. So I was like, it was that real.
It was like a family's small little plot of.
Yep. And in this very like tucked away, I can't even explain how tucked away it was, where it was just like, that felt like a little gift. Maybe, or that I was hallucinating, like, lightly.
Well, aren't hallucinations gifts, too?
Gifts from the lard?
or whoever.
Satan. Or Satan, who loves cemeteries. If you're Satan and you love cemeteries, email us at myfavoritemurder.
And put in the subject line, I'm Satan who loves, just so we know it's you.
Yeah, just be like, it's me, hey. And maybe put that deviled ham devil on there, just so we recognize. Okay, I'm not going to read you the title of this one. Okay. It gives it away. Greetings and salutations. In the recent minisode, you asked for our rabies stories, so here is mine.
We did? Well, we're smart.
Yes, we did. Last November, I was taking the compost out to our bin in the backyard at twilight. It's a short distance. My wife and I live in Kansas City with a rather small backyard. As I was making my way back to the house, I saw something fly at my face. I stopped, completely shaken, but went on. I suddenly noticed that my shirt felt heavier than normal.
No!
I looked down and there was a bat staring up at me, clinging to my shirt. My high-pitched scream was epic. My wife, inside the house, thought that there was a cat in distress. But alas, no cat. Just me with a bat hanging on my chest.
Oh, no.
Luckily, I was wearing my leather gloves. It was November, after all. So I quickly knocked it off my shirt and it flew away. Oh. Of course, I did what any millennial would do. I went inside and posted about it on Facebook. Within minutes, friends began to comment that I needed to get a rabies vaccine. Some frantic Googling determined that the CDC recommends a rabies shot following any contact with a bat.
Wow.
So off I went to the ER and I discovered, yes, I did need to get the rabies vaccine. A total of 6 shots that night with another 3 over the next month and a half.
No joke to get that vaccine.
For real. In order to get me out of the ER quickly, the head nurse decided that they could give me 3 shots at once and grabbed 2 other nurses.
Oh, dear.
This is my mother in action.
Nurses
are like, what's the problem? We need to get it taken care of. You're going to feel pain either way. Let's do all the pain at once. I'm going to decide for you. You aren't in a position to decide.
Here we go.
Counting down from 3. Okay. One stood at each of my legs. The third stood next to my arm. And when the head nurse said 1, 2, 3, poke, they administered 3 shots simultaneously. After a few moments to catch my breath, it was 1, 2, 3, poke again. That was all 6 shots. I had to come back to the ER for my additional shots 3 times in the next 6 weeks for 10 shots in total. One time, I could hear my nurse talking to the head nurse about my shot when suddenly the head nurse, who had been there the first night, shouted, "I know this guy. The Batman is back." Despite my ordeal, their rather terrifying appearance, and the fact that they can carry rabies, bats eat millions of bugs a year and are incredibly important to our ecosystem, they could use a little more love from people. I want to thank you both for being so mental health positive. Listening to old episodes during the pandemic encouraged me to start seeing a therapist again. Oh. Stay sexy and get a rabies vaccine if a bat flies into you, Patrick.
I feel like that they implanted something in his brain that makes him like, you know, how cats can do to make you the mouse not afraid of the cat. Because he's like, but bats are still great. I still love bats. It's like he's been mind warped.
When he looked down at the bat that was on his shirt, the bat looked up at him and sent sonic
vibration.
Sound waves of tranceness into his ear hole.
Trance music. And now he's a raver.
He's a raver for bats. He's a pro bat raver. Beautiful work, Patrick.
I love that story. The idea of a bat flying at him wasn't as bad as the idea of a bat hanging on his shirt. Like when you said, and my shirt felt heavy, I was out.
Yeah, because that means that bat had some real
heft.
Thank you to it. Heft. I was going to say gravitas.
maybe he was a flamboyant bat too.
Hey, listen to this. Did I ever tell you about the time I was in this at my old house? Mm-hmm. I was, I think, sitting at the kitchen table writing, and I got a weird feeling like I wasn't by myself. And I looked down, and there was a praying mantis on my arm. And when I looked down, it turned its head and looked up at me.
Oh, and they're so creepy.
They're it's like having an alien, a tiny alien on your arm.
Yeah.
And I screamed, but didn't do anything because I didn't want to hurt it. But then it jumped off or like moved off.
Where are you living that praying mantises just like, are just like coming in your house?
Burbank, baby.
Burbank.
Anything can happen.
They didn't tell you that in the brochure of Burbank.
You got to move there if you love praying mantises.
Oh, but they're pretty cute. Okay.
Yeah, they are.
This is just called Hometown Story, and it goes, hello. Congratulations on 5 years of the pod. You guys are truly amazing. I know you love Save Your Pet stories, so I'm writing in to tell you mine.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a good antidote to the bat story. When I was 3 years old, my family went camping at a local lake. I was the youngest of all my cousins and siblings, and I was constantly trying to keep up with them. As a three-year-old, they started climbing on some loose rocks near the edge of the water, and of course I followed. I was an incredibly clumsy child, and then I was like, you're three!
3 years old. Yes, we all are.
You're
Don't
supposed
worry.
To be. And immediately slipped and fell into the lake. My mom's Rottweiler, Hannah, jumped in the water before any of the adults even had time to react. Hannah swam under me, and I was able to grab onto her back.
No, no, no.
She carried me back to the land. She saved my life.
Yes, she did, Hannah.
She was probably smiling the whole time, too, with her big old Rottweiler.
She was like, my big chance.
There we go.
It's my big chance.
Hannah was an absolutely amazing dog, and she was such a protector of me and my brother when we were little. My mom recently told me about what I did as a five-year-old when I first got my black lab puppy, Casey. I carried her to the garden where Hannah was buried and introduced them to each other.
Oh, no. Are you kidding me?
I told Casey how good of a dog Hannah was and asked her to be a good dog, too. Hannah is proof that the scary Rottweilers in the movie/media is not the true narrative. I've always advocated for the breed, and I truly believe there are no bad dogs, only bad owners.
Yep.
Thanks for taking the time to read this. I hope you all have a wonderful day, and I hope you snuggle your pets a little extra. They truly love us more than we will ever know. SSDGM, Courtney. Mine are all feel good today, by the way.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, hey, we need it. Courtney, that was a lovely story about your dog named Hannah. I'd like to tell you a story about my dog named Frank, who woke me up at 3:30 last night, barking like someone was outside, scaring the shit out of me. Then he went outside and I stood there at the sliding glass door at 3:30 in the morning waiting for him to come back. Mm-hmm. And he didn't come back for like 10 minutes.
Where'd he go?
And then I was like, he went and had an adventure by himself. And I was like, Frank. Because it's 3:30 in the morning. I can't actually call for him in any meaningful way. And when he finally came back, he was crawling. He was walking super low. What? Like he knew he was being bad. Because he just like, he hears me calling and he just chooses not to come. So may we all have a Hannah in our life. But I guess I'm the bad owner because I got a Frank that's so goddamn Frank. It's unbelievable.
Well, she didn't come back with like an arm bone that she had...
True. But I've been hearing noises, and so I of course was standing there. I'm like, what if as Frank was like walking around the like backyard, he got pulled into a bush and there's someone back there, like he was
Frank
barking
would
at
lose
a person.
His mind if someone tried to grab him. Can you imagine?
Oh, that's right. He doesn't like being like kind of held or he can't be picked up. You literally can't pick him
tank.
Up off the ground.
He's a tank.
He's serious.
I think you're good. But it is like, it's almost like sending him out to go find what the problem is. And then if he doesn't come back, you're mad at him. Not like, well, he found the problem and the problem is still there.
Yeah. Now he has a problem. Right. It was like a little bit of like a horror movie mixed in with like Lilo and Stitch or whatever. Where, no, that's the wrong one. Milo and Otis. Milo and Otis. It was like Milo and Otis has a dark turn where it's like, wait, Otis?
He didn't Otis. Come back? He was supposed
to. And George wouldn't go outside. That was the other thing that was scaring me. Anyway,
keep your doors closed this time. Call the police, Karen. But you don't need to be opening the doors for the intruders in your backyard.
I thought he was going to pee and come back in. Oh. George just runs out and literally runs back in.
Frank's
so,
like, goodbye. It's 3:30 in the morning. Okay.
Frank's like, I'm restless. I'm tired of quarantine. I want to go walk around. I'm not going to read the title gives it away. Hi, guys, gals, and furry four-legged pals. Wonderful. The college bomb scare in my hometown from Minnesota 214 reminded me of a similar-ish story from my high school. I went to a small K through 12 school in Lafayette, Colorado. Wow. Colorado. Right outside Boulder. Yes, a lot of seniors smoked weed behind the dumpsters. Yes, I know you're thinking that.
Colorado.
So let's just say it. One morning on my way on my way to school with the carpool, several police cars were redirecting traffic well away from the school, and no one would tell us why. So we went back home and turned on the news to find that a suspicious black duffel bag was found in the student parking lot around 7 a.m. that morning. Naturally, the police were called, suspecting it was a bomb. Other students and teachers held a lockdown at the school. A bomb robot was brought in to handle the duffel bag, and when it came to finally open it, law enforcement found several cans of spray-on deodorant and a Kermit the Frog doll. Uh-oh. The doll was colored with a Sharpie and cut up to look like it was beaten and bloody.
What?
Apparently, a few junior-senior boys thought it would be funny to, quote-unquote, kidnap Kermit from a teacher's classroom and pass it around, giving it its wounds. Two of the guys arranged a drop-off of the doll. One guy didn't want the doll and threw it out of his car into the lot where it was found the next morning.
What?
They didn't get into any trouble with the police for this weird-ass prank, and I can't remember if the school punished them or not. But for the rest of my high school career, every January 25th was Kermit the Bomb Day. What a holiday. Stay sexy and don't mess with Kermit, Lauren.
Wow, my God. Teenage boys should just be locked up for 4 years.
Also, I think this is such an indication of, like, if somebody saw a suspicious duffel bag in the parking lot of my high school, people have been like, somebody go get that duffel bag.
Okay, but like, you can kick that the furthest.
Exactly. These days, it's like, call every authority you can get on the phone.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Which is how it is these days.
It is.
Okay, this one's called, I'm the teen photo lab worker in 1998 who knew all of your secrets and shit.
Oh, my.
And I picked this one because my sister, who's a photographer now, had the same career job all through high school at the one-hour photo lab. And so we got to see a lot of cool shit and got a lot of free. I have some of those terrible high school, like, dramatized photos of me that my sister took that we got.
I bet you do.
Oh, you know I do.
Some glamour shots.
I have some fucking glamour shots.
Do you ever wear a feather boa in any of them?
No, these were artsy ones, you know, like up in a tree. And then when she was learning how to, like, do superimpose, like, another you, and you're looking at yourself. But I was, like, super into, like, you know, raves and shit. So I'd get all dressed up with the fake eyelashes and the wigs.
Sure.
And stuff.
You were very heroin chic.
I was heroin chic. Thank you for saying that. I've been waiting for you to say that for
Finally,
5 years.
I give you the credit you are so rightly deserved.
Thank you. Okay, this says, hi. Okay, so you didn't ever ask for this specifically, but I think you're going to like it. My first job was at the neighborhood one-hour photo lab in Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
And then Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Says, that's where that mall is.
All caps, not Pennsylvania.
Lesson learned.
That's right. I was 17 years old when I got hired. And 20 years later, I still think about that job every single day. I worked there for about 5 years. And wow, what a time. Something that most people never realized was that we had to look at all your photos, every single one of them, in order to balance color, control the exposure, and check for dust. Every printed photo was looked at by myself or another one of the three employees. We were a standalone professional lab offering one-hour service, so quality control was super important. And for someone curious by nature, checking every picture was the most thrilling part of my job. You're shaking your head. No.
I mean, it is until that day.
Right.
Until the day.
Well, it would take me a year to tell you everything I saw, but here are some highlights. Every suburban mother who got breast implants would take titty pics in her bathroom mirror, every single one, multiple times.
Oh, shit.
Because you couldn't see what they looked like until you looked at photos. You know, not like now.
You can't see in the mirror?
Yes, but that's the other way. You won't be able to see them that way.
Oh, you wouldn't.
You couldn't just take a selfie. Whatever. The county coroner's office had an account with us and processed autopsy photos.
Whoa.
Once I saw someone I recognized being taken apart.
No
one even bothered to get NDAs, which still baffles me. I was 17. What the fuck? Yeah, they should have worn these.
Yes, that should be in the training manual.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's insane.
So many people taking secret weekend vacations with their side piece and then coming straight back home to their real life and finishing out the roll of film with a family birthday.
No,
the smart ones would throw the negatives away on the spot and ask for an extra envelope for the separate pics. The stupid ones do not. battling grandmas. Two old ladies in the neighborhood had shared grandkids and they hated each other. Grandma A would ask me to automatically crop Grandma B out of any of her pics from the holidays, while Grandma B would try to slip me a $5 note, and she said that's not enough, to sabotage Grandma A's photos with bad printing, but also make her a copy of good pics of the kids. Two grandmas who hated each
genius.
Other.
That is genius.
I can't believe they both were like, I bet they would have, if they had known the other one was doing that, they would have become friends because they were both so fucking sabotagey.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you're a bitch, you know. Dude.
Yeah, right. It's the same.
I knew about major life events happening with my schoolmates that they didn't realize I was privy to. Cancer battles, divorces, home sales, financial trouble, deaths of pets, car crashes. I hold secrets like a fortress, but that lame ass saying, you never know what battles people are fighting, is absolutely true, except I knew. And then she just said, porn shoots. I never figured out the location. The billing address for the account was a P.O. box, but there was a professional porn set somewhere close by in suburbia.
Wow.
And they were, quote, required to take photos of sets and actors during production, quote, for compliance, whatever the fuck that means.
OSHA?
For OSHA. I never understood it. This was the late 90s, many years before the era of inadvertently stumbling into porn on Twitter once daily. So the images were shocking to teen me. And yes, extra copies got printed out and put in a drawer, but not by me. So think back to your 90s photos and realize that some curious local art teen was rerunning your titty pics and side pieces because the color balance was off for the first time. We need that shit to look its best. Stay sexy and never go digital, E.
Oh, my God. That's, first of all, thank you, E, for knowing us so well. Yeah. That you would know that we would adore this.
Yes.
It's perfection.
Yeah.
And the idea that you are stupid enough to cheat on your spouse and take fucking photos.
I think it's you're cheap, like, enough to not be like, well, I only took 16 out of 24. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
But also, it's just like, you're so sorry. You're going to go away for the weekend with your secret lover, mm-hmm. man or woman, and then be like, okay, go over by that rock. Click. It's so lame. It is so
I have
unsexy.
A couple more pictures in my camera. Let's just use these real quick.
I'll use these up. That's fine. Oh, it's just, God. Like, wait, so do you have a secret photo album? Like, what's
right.
That? What are those secret photos for?
It's called your glove compartment where you stash all your...
Nerd cheater. Oh, yeah. There's nothing worse than a nerd cheater. God, that's so good.
Yeah.
If you also worked at a photo mat or...
Yeah.
Did you ever see that Robin Williams movie, 1 Hour Photo?
Oh, so good.
God, it's good.
It was so good.
It's good.
If you had a job that you're like, I'm sure bowling alley workers are like, what was your job that you're like, you don't understand what it was actually like here because this person worked there was a weirdo and that old timer was this. Send those in to us. We want to hear about your jobs.
You were a bar back at the local bar.
Yeah.
Where things went sour.
What did you see? We love lists, bullet pointed lists.
Creepy, weird, odd. The underbelly. This is the David Lynch email series.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's suburbia, but suddenly you're the 17-year-old holding the secrets of
right.
everyone in town.
You're the only person in town who hasn't drank the Kool-Aid. And you're like, I see all. Because of course you do. You're art teen. Like, that's what your job is, to be bummed and like observant in high school.
Also, it'd be just awesome if then you were like in school and then your math teacher is like, well, you didn't turn that paper in, so you're going to get an F. And you're like, I don't think so. I saw what you did this weekend. And then you're
hold
just
up
like,
a picture?
You do understand how printing pictures works, don't you, Mr. Hebe?
Oh, Karen.
Yeah. That's... Always got a plan. Use things to your advantage. Strategize. Okay. My final one. This is an email. I'm not going to read you the whole thing because it gives it away. But part of the title of this is pre-cell phone times.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think it's good to talk about.
That's
these times.
Right. This was too, guys. I forgot to mention it. You might not know. This is pre... You have to get all of your photos developed unless you're you have a fucking studio in your house, which nobody does.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It was such a... It was so different.
Everything was.
Then.
There was only four it's numbers, so as we told you.
Look. There was four numbers. There was four possible picture choices. Birthday, blowing out a birthday cake, standing in front of a rock.
Please don't blow out a birthday cake.
Blowing a birthday cake off a table into your mean grandma's face while your other mean grandma laughs at her. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Pre-cell phone time. Okay. Hi, everyone, human and otherwise. One of my favorite stories happened when my sister's family came from Wisconsin to spend December 24th through January 31st with the rest of the family in Illinois.
Too long.
Right? That's a good long visit. Yeah. That's a month. This was a big deal because they were dairy farmers and it was difficult to get someone to care for the cows when they traveled. That's true. Mm. They had to be back for the 5 a.m. milking on January 1st, but my sister didn't care. She was going to visit with tons of relatives who would get to see how her toddler boys had grown. On January 31st, her husband said that they should get going at 5 p.m., but she wanted to stay for my aunt's New Year's Eve party. They compromised by going to the party, but only staying till 10 p.m. It was a five-hour drive on a and a snowstorm was coming. She took the first turn driving since she'd had to entertain the boys on the way up and hope they'd be sound asleep by the time her husband took over. That's very smart.
Ah.
She was also a little pissed she couldn't stay later. This was the early 80s, so instead of car seats, the couch in the back of their conversion van was folded flat, and Dad and the boys stretched out on it, unrestrained.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, I went to my first concert in a conversion van with my friend Jennifer Mason, her mom and dad driving. Uh-huh. And it was like we got to be taken in a living room to San Jose. To go see the band Chicago play.
In a box that was a traveling living room.
With carpet on the walls and the floor.
Was the only protection you had in case of a car accident.
That's right.
And that would give you rug burn. That was
shag carpet rug burn was the airbag of the 80s. It wasn't good. She drove for about 2 hours total, only stopping for gas around the state line. The snow was getting pretty bad and she was getting tired. So she hissed, "Gary, I need you to drive." Being careful not to wake the boys. No answer. She whispered again, "Gary, this isn't funny." Figuring he was giving her the silent treatment after their disagreement before. Finally, she pulled over and stormed to the back of the van. Her two boys were asleep on the couch, but her husband was not in the van. She figured he must have gotten out at the gas station 45 minutes earlier.
No!
Not sure what to do, she decided to drive to the next payphone and call the state troopers. She got to the payphone, started dialing, and who walks in behind her but Gary?
What?
He did get out at the gas station. He returned from the restroom just in time to see her pull away.
Oh.
A couple who had gassed up saw the whole thing happen and said, "Hop in, buddy, we'll catch her."
All right.
They lost my sister, the speed demon, in the storm, and after almost an hour said they reckoned it was time for Gary to call the state troopers and take it from there. They happened to stop at the same rest area.
What?
Yes. My poor sister and Gary live in a tiny community in Wisconsin, and it was literally years before people would let her leave any gathering without saying, "Hey, don't forget Gary now."
Oh, how fucking annoying. The third time someone did that, she wanted... Yep.
And then she's moving into year 17 of like, huh, very, okay. Very funny, Judy.
Okay.
Stay sexy, and if you don't want to get left behind, always tell the driver when you exit the road trip vehicle, Julie.
Yeah. That was a good one. And also, you always have to tell your husband to watch your purse, even though there's no way he wouldn't watch your purse. That reminds me, like, anytime I get up to go to the, you know, when we used to go to restaurants, be like, "Watch my purse." And then I'd be like, "Why wouldn't he watch my..." If someone walked up and snatched my purse, he wouldn't say, "Well, you didn't tell me to watch your purse."
Yeah. It's very similar to when people get up and say, "I'm going to go to the bathroom," when you're at a restaurant with like friends.
Yeah.
And I'd always be like, as people were standing up, I'd always go, "Where are you going?" Because it's like unless you're going to drink at the bar alone and get drunk and then come back to the dinner.
Yeah.
There's really only one place anyone ever goes. But we always go like, "Excuse me, I'm going to go to the bathroom."
Right.
But sure you are.
We know. We know. I know. Did you just say that to them when they tell you that? I know.
You're like, "You're going to go smoke weed by the dumpster." And we all know that.
We all know
Just like the kids in Boulder.
Those were great, guys.
Fun
obviously
times.
Send anything in. Send anything.
Yes.
Send what's the scraps to the bottom of your purse. Into my favorite murder at Gmail. We wanna know.
We wanna know everything about you.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's great for the relationship. Also stay sexy.
And don't get murdered. Goodbye.
Elvis, do you want a cookie?